All right, thanks everybody. We're going to get started now. So our next topic for today is on cyber insurance. And speaking for us on that is Sarah Watson. Sarah is a cyber underwriter for Camargue Underwriting Managers. She's worked in the cyber and commercial crime space, short-term insurance space, for the last 2.5 years, with previous experience being in the healthcare sector. Sarah holds a diverse set of skills, having completed 2 BSc degrees, various insurance certificates, and cyber training modules. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks. Afternoon, everyone. So first thing, obviously, just a bit of background on who Camargue Underwriting Managers are. So Camargue was established in 2001. We're a specialist liability insurance underwriter. So that means that you're looking at third-party sort of cover in a way. We offer a wide range of covers of liability insurance. And obviously, liability insurance protects you as an individual business from the risk of being held financially liable for damages and injuries to a third party, as I just mentioned. And it protects the clients against someone filing a claim or lawsuit against you. So we are an underwriting manager versus an insurer, okay? What means is that we are granted underwriting authority on behalf of an insurer. So we have various different syndicates that sit on our binders. So some of those to name is Brit, Allied World, Antares, and KI. We are part of the Lloyd Syndicate, so we also write into London. And then obviously we write a various sort of lines of cover. So commercial crime, directors and officers, medical malpractice, general liability, employees' practice liability, pension funds, financial institutions, and obviously topic for today, cyber insurance. So when you look at cyber insurance, what is the aim of cyber insurance? So the aim of cyber insurance is to protect and safeguard companies from damage posed by the evolving cyber threats. So in the periods of the 1990s, between 1994 and 2000, it is called the dot-com bubble, okay, in the United States. And it was a period over which there was a massive amount of internet adoption that happened. And as part of this bubble, many dot-com companies and investors implemented a growth over profits mentality. So what this meant is that they wanted to get into the market as soon as possible, so they went into the cyberspace as quick as possible, didn't necessarily have any controls in place, and therefore the need of cyber insurance became quite valid. Cyber insurance initially looked at your third-party losses, so obviously only covered your liability to others, and then evolve further into thousands to include first-party coverage losses. So it covers your BI and your business interruption, as well as your data loss. So it's one of our unique products in sort of liability space because we cover first-party and third-party costs. Currently, there's a high number of cyber attacks that happen due to social engineering, ransomware, and also malware. And this has mainly become due to the shift of daily life. We've become more tech-dependent. We've gone away from being as you can now work from home, which is fantastic. And in doing that, obviously, your social engineering and ransomware awareness needs to be sort of a lot better. Our software also has also evolved. Systems try and become more resilient, but the same occurs from a hacker point of view. As one becomes stronger, the other can become stronger, and it becomes a continuous cycle. So in 2001, it saw SA as the third highest number of cybercrime victims worldwide and cost our economy 2.2 billion rand for the year. So we require a sustained national public awareness campaign on information to mobilize our public awareness against the growing pandemic of cybercrime. Okay, it is one thing to very importantly mention, cybercrime in an insurance space, there's no such cover. You get cyber cover and you get commercial crime cover. So today we're mainly looking at your cyber cover. Okay, so one of the biggest things we always get asked is, why, as South Africa, are we always a target? We sit so far down south, we're third world, why do you want us? And mainly due to our movement of our landscape from going from being in an office to now being at home, we unfortunately have become a test bed for cybercrime, okay? They've found exploits that have been tested in SA. They can trace them back, and they're sitting in all your first world countries. Reason for that is because we have a range of businesses within our market. You've got your small SMEs as well as your big corporates, and your cyber controls range hugely. You have your corporates that don't want to implement any controls. The MFA is not there. I know I'm speaking acronyms. Please shout if you have any questions what they're meaning. So you have a whole lot of security controls your biggest corporates won't have, and neither do your smaller guys. And unfortunately, it's no longer a question of I won't be hit because I'm too small. It's now a matter of when will it happen, because everyone obviously gets targeted. So through claims handling experiences and obviously different knowledge of our unique landscape, the exploits can be traced back to us, and that's because of our diverse economy, economic climate. So we also have a harder insurance market, and this is because as insurers, we now require you to have minimum controls. Okay, so gone are the days where you could work with an insurer and they tell you if you input this, we'll give you this part of cover and then you change it to this part. Unfortunately, it's a bit more black and white. Either you have the control or you don't. So what that's also made in the space is that companies come for cyber insurance, realize that they don't have the list that's required, and they sort of go back and they say, well, I'll wait till I have an incident. The other main factor relates to our weak law enforcement. So we do have a Cyber Crimes Act. It was implemented in 2002. However, it hasn't really been fully enforced. So you can now be held liable for hacking a system and that sort of stuff. But if you, the chance of conviction is quite small. If we think of our normal landscape that we have and the amount of convictions we have in, through our law enforcement, if someone's sitting in Russia, in the USA, or anywhere overseas, if we can't get the guy that's on the street, it's unlikely we'll be able to trace the guy back to the UK or back to any other country. So unfortunately, we are a great soft target for hackers to try. So one of the other things that a big report that Cyanre came out at the beginning of the year was relating to the trends for 2023. So Cyanre, for those that sort of a bit of background, they do a lot of a triage across our all cyberspace in terms of getting systems up and running. So their first aspect, obviously, was that the biggest shift with enterprises and IT sort of strategies over the past decade has been the adoption of software as a service platform. So the hybrid working and working from home policies has necessitated the shift. However, this obviously now has made more of a cyber concern. So many different software as a service applications don't integrate into one single sign-on. So you normally have multiple different sign-ons you have to do. And if you're not integrating into one sign-on, you render most of your security controls useless. So your access into your system becomes more diverse. So they can go into any of the vulnerabilities in any of the softwares as opposed to just using one. So the biggest thing that they obviously suggested and one of the biggest controls that you have to implement is something called MFA. So MFA is known as multi-factor authentication. You probably find it when you get into a system, you have to use an OTP, or if you change a password, you have to be able to verify that it's you that's accessing it. The next aspect was that we are on our fifth generation of ransomware now. It's become a large business for a handful of large criminal organizations who run the show and develop increasingly sophisticated software to target the same organizations over and over again. So according to Cyber Reason, there was 55% of businesses fell victim to ransomware in 2021. 2022, this rose to 73%. And I'll tell you more stats about what happened in 2022 and 2023 shortly. It's even higher now. So it's expected to obviously then rise higher, which it has done. And the concern is that ransom will increasingly work on accessing cloud-based controls. So the best system for a small SME to implement is a cloud-based system because it's easiest to access. It helps with the work from home and your hybrid models. But with that, you need to ensure you have the correct controls in place. So many organizations have accelerated their cloud adoption, losing sight of sensitive information, where you store it, who has access to it, and how it's managed. And in doing that, you open yourself up to someone else trying to target it. So most people are focusing on endpoint access, so that would be your access on your laptops and putting something on there, as opposed to looking at their full cloud system. And particularly due to us working from home, that's why we're looking at endpoint devices at the moment. So threat actors are targeting cloud storage through weak credential managements. That's how they were currently accessing. And also there's significant data protection, obviously, to be flexible for that. So one of the biggest solutions that they've had to obviously trying to deal with that is vulnerability testing. So most of your insurers, when you get a policy, will offer you something called a CVS scan, cyber vulnerability scan, not a penetration test, okay? It's a vulnerability scan. It basically looks at the external of your environment and it'll tell you what the different necessary stuff you need to implement. And most of them offer it for free. Your next aspect, obviously, is the rise of deepfakes. So what are deepfakes? So basically, cybersecurity professionals are speaking on social engineering, okay, so for years, and it's become a critical security issue during the pandemic. So continuous education around social engineering has worked. However, many employees and individuals are increasingly not as wary as for an SMS or WhatsApp in terms of obviously someone trying to get into a system. Those are now becoming your new ways of infiltrating systems is through phones. And your malware and your cell phones is now becoming the newest, biggest trend that's sort of happening overseas. So it also means that obviously they're needing to find new ways to convince you to click on a malicious link. And your era of your deepfakes basically is your highly convincing images and your documents. So they're also finding now that your use of AI and machine learning is making this even more difficult to be able to see. So the biggest solution for that is obviously your awareness training that you do with all the sort of company basis, all those IT videos that you have to watch. So the next aspect obviously looks at your IT burnout. So there's a huge shortage of skills in the IT space and in security teams. Also, IT on security is no longer an 8-9-to-5 job. It's now a 24/7. So you need to ensure that you have the correct sort of software or something managing it so that you're able to support the IT sort of system that you obviously have. And your managed service providers obviously need to be always on. So that's why software always assists with it. So you're able to know directly what happens, and you obviously having forensic labs on call 24/7 ensures an organization can respond and remediate cyber threats quickly. The biggest thing in the cyberspace is that if you are slow, you're going to suffer more than if you can have a quick response. And then your other one relates to your supply chain threats. So this is when it relates to your patch management. So patching obviously is that each software is developed initially and there's going to be holes within the software and it's how it evolves and how it updates. And it's now said it used to be a time frame of about 2 hours for a vulnerability that obviously went through before it was found on the dark web. That was shortened in January to about 17 minutes. So a Windows update that you may get saying that their software was out of date, that Windows announces within 15 minutes on the dark web, there's a way to exploit it. And people then scan systems to see who has been quick to fix and who hasn't. So when we obviously look at the current landscape that obviously we've got now, so there's been a significant shift, as I've mentioned a few times, with the COVID pandemic and remote working. And this is due to our new modern work surface. So the fact that your supply chain vulnerabilities, the rise of collaboration that's online, and the growth of digital networking are the main reasons why the cyber landscape is becoming more treacherous. So collaboration tools such as your Zoom, your Teams, Google Workspace, all providing new threat services for cyber criminals to infiltrate. As they're essential for business function, you can't have an online meeting without it. It allows you to connect with everyone around the world. But the risk, obviously, of any unvetted tools is where it mainly lies. So they are finding now that staff are finding new tools to collaborate with different people. And if it's not a vetted tool by your own IT staff, you're opening yourself up for more sort of chances of someone trying to infiltrate it there. If we look at the MIMCAST report for 2023 that came out of the 2023 things, our most recent stats, they said that obviously data breaches are now viewed as the greater risk than climate change, inflation, or any other financial risk to a business. So they said that there's a 13% in ransomware rise in 2022, and that means that you have an average day of 212 days to detect a breach, okay? And it's 75 days to contain that. Okay, so you only have 365 days in a year, so that's almost two-thirds of a year to be able to find it and contain it. 82% of companies have reported higher volume of email in 2022 than there was in 2021. That only had 79%, and in 2020, it was slightly higher at 81%. So you can see that as COVID hit, email sort of volume increased. It then slightly decreased in 2021, and we've gone even higher than we were in COVID levels. And you've had a growing sophistication in email threats because of your AI and other tools that obviously pose more dangers. So your ChatGPT, we used to be able to detect the English that someone else had written from India. Now they just go into ChatGPT and it gives them a coherent paragraph and they copy and paste it. So your awareness training becomes very vital. So your cybercrime is expected to cost the world about $8 trillion, which is larger than the GDP for every country except the United States and China. Okay, there are 33 billion electronic records expected that have been stolen, and there are 34 ransomware attacks daily in South Africa. Okay, so target business for our main sort of areas that they're targeting is mainly low volume, high transactions. So your asset managers, anyone that's doing sort of high value transactions, that's where they want to get in because they get a better payday from it. So 94% of attacks start with an email. It comes through a URL that's a bad impersonation, now with AI, better impersonation. And they are mainly targeting your HR, your finance, and your senior staff members. And it said that 96% is from human error in terms of getting into your system. So you can actually get malware kits on the dark web that make it possible for any common person to access a system. There is also a website called This Is Totally Legit. And if you don't have a certain record, which I'll mention later, it's called an SPF on your email, you can hack their email. So there's another website you can actually search a domain for, see it doesn't have a certain record on it, go and hack the companies, all independent with having no IT skills, using free search engines. So it is quite scary. Three quarters of all companies that expect email-borne attacks to have serious consequences on their organizations in the next coming year. Okay, so going further, just mainly into ransomware, because that's where a lot of the main risk sort of lies at the moment. So same thing in that Mimecast report, it said that 66% of companies were hit with ransomware. Your smaller companies were more severely affected. So they had 70% of companies that had between 250 to 500 employees that were hit with ransomware. So your smaller guys are not immune, and they have more severe consequences because they don't necessarily have the IT there or the controls set up and the policies to be able to respond to it quick enough. And your highest industries that were hit were your customer services, your energy sector, healthcare, and then your media and your entertainment. We then, if you look at your Veeam sort of ransomware as well, that's a software. So they did mainly a trend in Europe for 2023. So they found that basically there was a higher percentage of ransomware in Europe than what has been seen in SA. So 85% of companies are sitting in Europe are being hit by ransomware compared to our 66. So I'll take the small gain, even though we are the test bed for them. And it's increased from 76% in Europe. So they have had a rise of 9% in their ransomware in the last year. It also showed that 93% of all ransomware attacks attempt to destroy your backups first. Okay, so it's why your insurer normally will ask you, is it cloud-based or is it disconnected from your main network? Because as soon as someone gets in, they destroy your backup files, so you can't recover. So it's very important that all your backup files are disconnected. Because without them being disconnected, they just destroy all your data or hold all your data. Your next thing is that 13% those that paid the ransom, only 13% of them recovered from it. So paying a ransom doesn't necessarily help. It's why also you have an insurer working with you because they have all the insight on the different companies or different syndicates at work to try and verify as whether paying a ransom will help. We did hear of a poor company that basically paid a ransom 3 times before they realized they weren't going to get the data back. They didn't have an insurer to advise them. It's also then said, obviously, that 20% of organizations who pay ransom don't get their data. So, as I've said, paying a ransom doesn't necessitate that you'll get data back. We then looked at, there's another sort of report that came out beginning of this year that looked in terms of cost-wise. So that was your IBM security report on the cost of a data breach. So the average data breach costs $4.3 million in 2022. So it showed a 2.6 increase on 2021 and a 12.7 increase on 2020. NSA, our data breach cost is slightly less. So we only have 3.36 million as our cost per average data breach, which has increased by 5%. So you'll notice that our increase has been larger than the globe in terms of 2021 to 2022. And it said the average ransomware attack, so not data breach, is higher. It costs you more money to have a ransom than it costs you to just have a data breach. So having a data breach, basically someone will just come in and steal your data. Having a ransomware, then we lock your system down. That's the main difference of them. And 83% of companies have had more than one breach, with 17% only experiencing one. So they do hit you twice, if not more, if they can help it. And then 60% obviously increased their prices of services and products due to data breaches to try and recover costs. And your inclusion of your AI and automation have reduced your costs for a data breach. So having AI and machine learning on your systems helps you reduce it, as well as being able to detect it faster. So your AI and your automation has been seen as the largest cost saving found in the study. It resulted in a 74-day shorter time period to identify and to contain the breach. Your use of AI and automation has jumped up by about a fifth in the last sort of 2 years. It was only at 59% in 2020, and now it's at 72% in 2022 with everyone using it. And the use of stolen and compromised credentials was one of the most common causes of a data breach. So one of the other things that they always say in the cyberspace that you should always be very careful of is where and when you use your corporate email account. So if you're using it to be able to sign on to different aspects, that email domain, if that data is ever breached, ends up on the dark web. So someone will try and find your domain, and then it links to try and then attack companies. So they say if you can avoid using your corporate email, try and use a personal email to protect a corporate sort of domain. So looking at exciting things as an insurer, or as an underwriter myself, there's a numerous amount of factors that obviously we look at. So the first aspect is whether companies are SMEs or non-SMEs. For us at Camarg, we have quite a high threshold for an SME client. You need to have more than a turnover of 500 million rand to be able to classify as a non-SME for us. And that obviously depicts on what controls we require you to have. So first aspect is your filtering of incoming emails and communication. That basically just checking what's coming in and what's going out. You have your MFA, so multi-factor authentication. We require that on user accounts, so that would be on your normal accounts and your backup access. And then obviously we all connect remotely normally, so that's becoming one of the new threat services as well. So I spoke about earlier about something called a sender policy framework, so it's called an SPF. And what that does is that it stops impersonation on emails. So an SPF and a DMARC, your DMARC will stop your impersonation 100%, and that stops from someone being able to climb into your mailbox and send emails on your behalf. So when I was talking about trying to hack someone's system, if you have no SPF in place, someone can hack you instantly by using that website called "This is totally legit." And it is called that. It's quite interesting. So your next aspect is your advanced threat protection and your EDR. So these are your endpoint softwares. So advanced threat protection is something that is much broader. So if you're thinking of an example, if you think of a castle, so your advanced threat protection would check the external sort of systems and it checks everything. And your EDR just sits on your endpoint. So that'll sit on your laptop, sit on your printer, sit on your final destination. So you normally will have an ATP sort of implemented first, and then you'll have your EDR as an add-on. Backups have become your next critical aspect, because without a backup, you can't get data back if someone knocks down your system. So backups, you get two different forms. So you get cloud-based, and obviously you get the old one of putting it onto a hard drive, onto a different device. And the biggest thing, if it's on a hard drive on a device, is it encrypted? Meaning, can someone else read it without having your encryption key? And is it disconnected? It's great to have backups, But if they're connected to a main network, they become a bit useless if someone gets into your system. And the next major thing about backups is that if you don't keep multiple versions of it and you copy over one, if you find malware in your system on day 200, you now have to go back to day one to get your uncompromised data back. So if you ever do a backup, even if you do on your personal PC, keep multiple copies of it just so that you're able to find different data and you can find out when it wasn't infected. Otherwise, it becomes as useful as if it was plugged into a system, unfortunately. So the next thing is encryption. So encryption is when your data gets changed into zeros and ones, and only you can read it with an encryption key. Okay, so most Windows laptops, you have something called BitLocker you can actually activate yourself. It comes with your laptop. It's a free thing that comes with it. And then it will encrypt. If someone takes out your hard drive, they can't actually read it. Data that's in transit would be by your emails. There already is something called a TLS and an SSL. I'm getting even more sort of complicated with different acronyms, which will encrypt all your email channels. So if you think of like a hose pipe, your hose pipe is that TLS and SSL channel, and inside is where your mails go through. So normally most of our data is now encrypted in transit, but that's how you can check it. And then data addressed is all your backups. So data address is something that's not necessarily accessed very often, and it's something that is stored. We then look at patch management. So as I was mentioning earlier, obviously within 70 minutes of a patch being told or notified that it's a vulnerability, it's already being trying to be infiltrated. So automatic is the best thing to have, especially on software patches. Some systems you can't do that because you need downtime for it. So we just require that it's done every 14 days. Those big ones. Your next biggest gold standard is awareness training. So that is where you can save a lot of your organization. You can have the best controls, but unfortunately, if you have someone that sits in your office that is having a bad day and sees a great picture and they click on it, your whole system gets compromised from the inside. So awareness training, obviously formal awareness training is the better one because you can obviously verify who's doing it and who isn't. And then phishing simulations, they always say add a bit of motivation to it. So if someone is doing really well, they get a prize for it. The person who clicks on the most amount of links gets, you know, something else for it. You can, always being creative always makes it a bit better. And then the other aspect is your record count. So this is one of the most probably complicated things that everyone asks when it comes to insurance is how do I determine a record count? So your record count has changed with Poppy. So they now look, Poppy talks about a data subject. So each one of us in this room is called a data subject, and a company would hold various items of or elements of our data. So your personal identifiable records, your PII. And your PII always relates to one person. Okay, so when you're working on a data subject or record count, you're working on the total number of data subjects that you hold. Okay, so it includes companies and people. Okay, so if I hold my email address, my phone number, and my home address, I'm holding three pieces of information, but it all relates to one person. Okay, the reason why it becomes a bit vital is that, or doesn't really matter the number of records, is that if I have a small data breach, my number of subjects that I breach could be very likely the same as if I have a larger one. Because if I just breach my source of phone numbers or the phone book or wherever it is on a PC, you'll have the same number of data subjects that are breached that if you breached three elements of data, because they'd be on the same thing. So when it comes to record counts, it is very important that you include everyone in the system. It is the best when we get told someone has 1,000 employees, obviously have a customer base, and they tell us you only have 4 records. Your cloud-based servers count as your records because you have access to them. If you think of a Microsoft Office 365, your data is encrypted on that Office 365. You hold the encryption key. And that is because Microsoft obviously wouldn't have the same for all of us because then we could all access each other's data and it wouldn't be a great business model for them. So in doing that, that it becomes your data. If your systems get breached, they can access your Office 365 sort of storage aspect of it. Any questions on underwriting controls? I know it's a very interesting avenue for different. So The next aspect, obviously, is that what does CyberCover now obviously cover? So for us, we have two sections to our main policy. So we offer a combined PI and cyber policy. So the PI is mainly for tech. So any tech company, we offer you your PI cover under our cyber policy. So that obviously is any errors or omissions in your work that's conducted and your multimedia liability. So anything arising out of physical or electronic sort of publication errors. When you then look at cyber cover, you have your security and privacy liability cover. So this looks at any liability arising out of your negligence to not secure your correct systems correctly. You then have your data recovery and your loss of business income. So this is your BI exposure. So it would be your business downtime that would be sort of due to an attack that obviously happens, as well as the recovery of your data that obviously you need to get from that. You then have your privacy, regulatory defense, and penalties cost. So this is that if you have any fines that you obviously get under POPI, as long as they're insurable under law, it's covered under an insurance policy. It also is if you hold data from the UK, obviously you have GDPR that you'll then also be susceptible to. So it's any legislation that you obviously need to abide by, as long as it's insurable by law. So we had our first regulator fine that came out probably like 2-3 weeks ago now. Our Department of Justice has been ordered to pay a 5 million rand fine, which is quite significant. Considering the most that the regulator can actually approve is 10 mil. So 5 mil was actually what they've been charged for. And it was due to a breach they sustained in 2020. They were told to implement certain controls like an antivirus, and they still hadn't done it by 2023, so they've been fined for it. And they've been breached quite a few times subsequent to their 2020 breach. So it's just one thing to know. It hasn't been indicated whether it was insurable or not under by law in terms of their privacy breach, but our regulator is starting to send fines out. So there's also a space to sort of watch. Your next aspect of cover looks at crisis management costs, customer notifications, customer support, credit monitoring, and PR assistance. So one of the biggest things in our world today is everything is digital. So your PR after a breach can make or break you. So we do have different services that help you with that immediately, because obviously what you tell your clients, what you tell your staff, and what you tell your executives could be three different messages to obviously preserve it as much as possible. Then under POPI, you are required to notify everyone of if the data has been breached once you've determined what data set it is. So that covers your costs, as well as any sort of credit monitoring. If someone's data is obviously got, we also offer a service to monitor that for a certain period to check that no one's using it elsewhere. And then your last aspect is your data extortion. So that looks as your ransomware cover. So one of the big things with cyber is that you have different sections, but one claim can trigger all of them. So if you get hit by ransomware, that ransomware locks your system down, results in business downtime, so you have a BI exposure. You've got data that's been lost, now that needs to be recovered. You've got data subject that need to be notified, so there's costs that you have there. You may then get into trouble because you didn't put the correct IT controls in place, so you have security and liability costs, and then you've got you may have a fine from the regulator because how you stored your data wasn't correct according to law. So it's one thing to mention is that when you're looking at a cyber policy, it's normally one limit across all sections. So you need to ensure you're buying the appropriate limit because one can trigger all. It's not necessarily isolated. And the other big thing when looking at insurance looks at risk management services. So risk management services are free with a purchase of a policy. Each insurer will have different services that they offer, and obviously they've got different benefits for you. So for us, we have obviously your cyber vulnerability scans. So that was one of the trends that obviously came up for Siandre in terms of your ransomware and checking that obviously that your systems are always secure. You get scans for free. They can either be monthly, quarterly, or annually. We then have something called a Brit DataSafe portal. So our cyber binder is underwritten 100% by Brit, which is a Lloyd's syndicate. And they have an online cyber portal that gives you examples of different policies that you can put in place, all the different trends that are happening in the cyber market, as well as offering you a training coordinator for all your awareness training and your phishing simulations that you normally pay for. And the other thing we have, obviously, is legal support. So contract vetting and management around that, you also get an option to sort of have that support if needed. So just some other liability covers to obviously look at is in relation to sort of our normal sort of space. So the other sort of space covers to look at is your employer's practice liability. So in South Africa, our legal force is possibly one of the most litigious communities in the world, okay? Even with an efficient and inexpensive means to sue employers, employees have little to lose when they bring even the most sort of basic cases against employers. So consequently, obviously, employers are frequently finding themselves at the mercy of the labor legislation. Even with efficient HR developments, you run the risk of falling victim to inconsistent decision-making processes and dispute resolution forums. So it makes an EPL insurance policy one of the most important elements of the company's insurance portfolio. In addition to damages that are awarded against the insured, you obviously are covered for any cost to legal expenses, out-of-court settlements, as well as paybacking of any of the reinstatement of covers, and obviously if the claims brought against past employees, current employees, or job applicants. So EPL is one of the biggest spaces we're finding a lot of claims that are coming from, and it's one of the best sort of covers to have in place if you don't sort of have. The next one is directors and officers liability. So what is that? That is cover for your directors and officers of a company in the event that legal proceedings pertaining to the failure to perform duties come in their personal capacity. So with King 4 and the Companies Act, it renders a director and officers liable of sort of critical for companies, regardless of your size, as you can now find yourself in a much more of a sort of onerous position than ever before. Legislation is holding people more accountable for wrongful acts and any negligent actions, as well as breaches to fiduciary duties. So you could have the fact of you haven't put in a cyber policy in place, you have a cyber breach, and you end up with a DNO or directors and officers claim against you because you didn't put it in correctly. So directors and officers face personal liability if a company experiences loss or damage due to conduct and of not meeting sort of requirement standards. So it is one of the another sort of areas around cover that becomes quite vital. And then your other aspect, because obviously we are where we are, is that is commercial crime. And this is cover for any employee dishonesty and computer fraud, extortion or fraudulent transfers and instructions. So this would be from someone stealing from within or it's any financial loss. So when I spoke about cyber crime that everyone talks about, you look at cyber. So cyber is the loss of data, whereas crime is a loss of funds. So commercial crime would be someone hacking into your bank account and stealing money from you. That's covered under a commercial crime policy, whereas your cyber is someone coming in and stealing your data and locking down your systems. Any questions, sorry, on that? Besides the scary stats of different cyber worlds. Sorry. Any questions, or do I get a cheap round today? Sorry, I apologize for my voice. I got one in the corner. Okay.
Hi. How do you enforce your underwriting controls?
So for us at Camarg, if you don't have them, you don't get cover. And then, so either you have the controls in place and we offer you cover, or you don't. So part of insurance is different to, so insurance is different to most normal sort of policies or most other contracts, is that we, insurance's trust on what you declare to us is in place. So if you declare that there are a whole lot of controls that are obviously in place, we trust you that they are there. It's a principle of insurance. But if a claim were to come about that it wasn't there, it would be a non-material disclosure and the cover probably wouldn't respond. So that makes sense. So in terms of, there's a whole list that you would obviously declare yes or no is in place. If you say it's declared in place, we find out at a claim stage it isn't, your claim most likely wouldn't be paid for non-material disclosure. If that makes sense. Yeah, does that answer?
I guess some of the criteria you mentioned, it's quite like vague sometimes, like advanced threat detection. You know, it's quite a vague topic or like a broad topic. So, I mean, ticking that box can be easy or it can be very hard. It depends on,
So it's one of, the reason why I smile is it's one of the, especially in the IT space, when you have a really good IT guy that's sort of turned on, he says, how can I tick yes or no? Because it's a bit of a gray area. And then you get others that don't even know what ATP stands for, and they're filling in the form for it, and they sort of are like, you explain a few times. So I think the thing is that when it comes to it, you don't want to be too prescriptive around which ATP software you're obviously using. So it does it fill the requirements for it. So ATP mainly used to be something with Windows, that now has become Windows a bit sort of bit defender or Windows Defender. And then but you get various different other products that now do it. So on an SME risk, we just require that ATP is there. Your EDR is more for your bigger corporates or someone that's over the threshold. But yeah, they are a bit vague to try and cover all software that obviously is there. But we are in the cyberspace, especially when it comes to underwriting with controls, we quite enjoy having meetings with clients because we believe we understand your system a lot better if we can have a discussion around it, especially if it's complex systems. So we always encourage brokers as well to say, if people don't or can't tick it yes or no, write as much as you can for us, and then we'll have a discussion around it because you understand it better that way.
Cool. And then, sorry, just a follow-up question. I know there's another hand. You mentioned a lot of stats. So are some of them like from internal data or like where do you get most of the data sources?
So the data sources, so one of them was the Mimecast Security Awareness 2023 report that came out about a month and a half ago now in April, and then you had the Veeam report as well and the IBM. So those are two software reports. So a lot of the stats I've got are from, it's reports that are done sort of globally as well as some of the stuff that's done in SA. So the main one on the five trains was from Cyandre, which is our main, obviously, triage here. So they're different. We have a couple of internal sort of stats that obviously we use, but the global stats are much better. They give a much better picture because it obviously is across the full market as opposed to just what we are exposed to.
Just similar question in terms of the stats. Just wanted to understand where exactly, or the companies that are involved. So if you say 66% in South Africa were attacked via ransomware, like what kind of companies, and also then, I guess, overall, you know, like number-wise, what does that represent?
So they took it was a broad range of companies across all different divisions. That's how they ended up with your most sort of, the four sectors that were the most hit, which I'll have to get back to remember them. So you had your customer services, your energy, healthcare, and entertainment and media. So how they do it, they actually take a sector across all of it. So you get, it's across all areas, all revenue streams as well. I think there was about, I mean, I'd have to look at it again, but I think about 1,500, if not more, companies across that they've taken a wide range of it. So Mimecast is also, so there's 66 companies that are hit sort of globally, and then the 34 ransomware came from, it's another report that's linked to the Mimecast one as well, that obviously looks at SA in particular, looking at sort of within the sample pool that they took of the SA companies that obviously came as well. Was sort of where they got them all from. So you've got your different sort of databases on it. So your Veeam report was mainly in Europe. It wasn't sort of only your SA ones. But the trends across those were found in all the other reports as well in terms of your backups and stuff, in terms of normally taking it out.
We have a few questions from online. Sorry, I probably should have mentioned to you. We had some people watching online. So yeah.
Should I stay in the middle? I mean, now I'll move away from the camera. Yes, yeah?
Thanks, Sarah. Do you expect that the increased utilization of deepfakes by cyber criminals targeting mobile devices will give rise to personalized cyber products offering cover for digital identity theft, etc.?
So there actually has been. So there are a couple of products. I know there are a couple of insurers that are launching a personal sort of cyber product. We haven't. We're still in the commercial sort of space. The mobile industry in terms of apps it's quite scary. So whether it's Apple or Android, it doesn't matter. Both have been hit. I had an Apple and I thought I was safe, but it's not. And they've actually found that, it's even worse, in your apps, so like you actually get antiviruses for your phones, there are certain antiviruses on the system that advertise to be an antivirus, but it's malware. And you're now getting different apps that people actually have developed. So the problem is that you obviously have the conflict between a personal device, because I hold my own data on that device, but I also access company data like emails. And in doing that, the corporate obviously wants to keep the emails secure, but you can't delete my personal data. So you're now getting data and apps that will is able to identify corporate data on a phone and personal data so that when it is stolen or infiltrated, it will wipe the corporate data and leave your personal data because of obviously some sort of, you know, the nature of that sort of side of it. But it is something we've actually just launched on our side as well. So all our SME risks, you have an antivirus as part of your policy. So you have up to 100 employees that can get a free antivirus on their phone to help with that mitigation as well. Next one. Yeah.
Thanks. This is a bit of an observation on an interesting market dynamic just to get your commentary on. Cyber risk is ever-changing and increasing, and it's difficult to quantify. But why does the London market, according to Brit, have more capacity this year to underwrite cyber, leading to more available cover at cheaper prices?
So what tends to happen is that, so obviously it sort of filters. So you normally have the States will change something, then it goes to the UK and it comes down. What's happened with the movement of the cyberspace since COVID is that your security controls and what people have put in place have had to step up. So insurers said to you in 2020, 2021, well, maybe not 2020 because we didn't quite know it yet, COVID just hit. In 2021, you got a whole list of stuff you need to put in place. For us at Camargue, we even had, I think your average increase in 2021 ranged from 60% to 200% in your policies. And that increase has come down because now controls are better, so the market is slightly better. So it's not to say that the claims aren't there. They're huge claims. And they're big claims that are still being hit and big corporates still being hit. But the controls have increased. So the ability to be able to write it, your United States and your English, sort of your UK systems, their market is becoming a little bit softer. Our market is a bit softer considering that you sat between a 60 to a 200% increase in 2021. You then went to a 25 to about 50% increase in 2022, and now you're sitting at like a 15%. So it still sounds very high, but from where we've come from, it is improving because of the postures getting better.
Okay, there are a few more, and I don't think we're going to have time for everyone.
That's perfect. Thanks so much, Jerry. We appreciate it. Any more questions in the room, or is that us? Great. Thank you.
Thanks.